Get ready to make like Jason Alexander and listen up, because it's time for Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. I'm going to guess that you didn't get that joke, Mike.
Yeah, it whooshed, but I'm sorry.
I thought about it, and I was thinking to myself, like, this is a joke that very few people will get, if anybody will get this joke. But Jason Alexander was on a very short-lived sitcom called Listen Up back in the mid-2000s.
Wow. That's a real deep cut.
I know. So I've just explained the joke now, so I'll pause for a second. You guys can all laugh. And we can move on with our day. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me, as always, is a man who, just because he's blind, don't mean he's a fucking saint, bro.
Mike DiCriccio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good. Hanging in there. I've got a little congestion going on, so I apologize if I sound weird. Other than that, I'm ready to talk about movies.
Yeah, well, that's rough, because, I mean, as I just said, you're blind. And if you're congested, that's two of your senses that are down.
Yeah.
So you've got to rely solely on your hearing, which is great because it's a podcast, your sense of taste and your sense of touch, neither of which will help you out in podcasting. So you're relying solely on one sense here.
Yeah. Basically boned.
That is a shame. But if you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, we'll just keep moving.
Yeah, why not?
First, we start with some film news, and then we move on to some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately. And then after that, we'll move on to our featured review. This week, we are reviewing the new film from director Fede Alvarez, Don't Breathe. You excited, Mike?
I am. That's it.
Good. I'm glad you're excited. I feel like you're not using your one sense very well.
Oh, man. Life is hard.
It definitely is. But let's get into some film news. Hi, it's time for... What? It's time for... It's time for... Film news. Hi, it's time for... What? It's time for... It's time for... Film news. Film news. All right, let's get into some film news. And I did want to bring this up briefly. A comedic icon has passed away just the other day. Gene Wilder, a giant who was a huge part of just about everybody's childhood with Willy Wonka. And a huge part of my own comedic sensibilities with his work with Mel Brooks, like Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles, and The Producers. He's passed away. He's at the age of 83 from complications of Alzheimer's. It's very upsetting, but, you know, he had a very long life. And he's produced some amazing work. I mean, Young Frankenstein is one of my favorite movies ever.
Yeah, I would agree. This is, 2016 added to a long list of pretty devastating celebrity deaths that have been happening.
Yeah, it's been a rough year, and I mean, I feel like every year I feel like we say, like, it's been a rough year for celebrity deaths. But yeah, I feel like they just keep dying, and I don't know why. It's almost like time marches onward.
Yeah, it's almost as if people are old now.
Yeah,
but who knows?
But in any case, rest in peace, Gene Wilder. Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles, The Producers, like three movies that are just amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, just even like his first role was a supporting role in Bonnie and Clyde. And he steals the movie when he's in it. Like, he's so good in it. So in any case, very upsetting news. But we'll move on to some lighter news and some very puzzling news. John Turturro, recently the star of The Night Of on HBO, which has been a very good show. Not the show that it was as great as I feel like the pilot promised, but it was still very good.
Right.
And John Turturro was fantastic in it, especially in the finale. And John Turturro is well known as for his work with the Coen Brothers. He's worked on a few Coen Brothers movies. He played Jesus in The Big Lebowski, Jesus Quintana, and he's been secretly shooting a film.
Shrek 5. Oh, man, I jumped the gun on that one. I'm trying to rely solely on hearing, and I can't do it.
Yes, John Turturro has secretly been shooting Shrek 5 as his character, Jesus. Now, Jesus is not in the movie. John Turturro is directing Shrek 5 as Jesus.
As Jesus, correct.
Because he's a method director.
Please don't make that a thing.
Oh, man, it could be a thing.
It already is a thing with Inuyuritu, but...
Yeah, I guess that's true. John Turturro has secretly been shooting a film that is not Shrek 5, centered around Jesus from The Big Lebowski. It's possibly a remake of a 1974 French film called Les Valsouets. It's currently titled Going Places, and it's about two men Two petty thieves. One of them is John Turturro's Jesus. The other is a character named Petey, played by Bobby Cannavale, who can beat to give a woman her first orgasm after she gets roped into their hijinks.
What a plot synopsis.
I have no idea what this movie's going to be like. You know, I mean, it doesn't sound like it's anything like The Big Lebowski. And I also feel like I don't want it to be.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
no, that's definitely true.
Yeah, here's the thing. John Turturro has been talking about doing a Jesus spinoff of The Big Lebowski for years. And
really?
Yes!
Okay.
It's something that I feel like nobody was really asking for, but also, like, it might be something interesting. Like, John Turturro occasionally directs movies, and they're usually, like, pretty low-key, like, indie comedy movies, indie drama movies, and... so this could be a totally different movie than The Big Lebowski. It's a remake of a 1974 French movie.
Yeah. That should be enough to make it different.
Yeah, hopefully. So I thought that was interesting. I feel like not enough people are talking about this. I feel like we should be talking about this every day.
I feel like I do remember seeing an article posted about this, but and then it disappeared, and I don't think I even read the article.
Yeah, it's just bizarre, and it sounds like the Coen brothers are not involved at all,
right?
In this thing, so we'll see what happens, I guess.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, it could like it has the potential to be just a bizarre, insane fun time, or just be like a really stupid thing.
Do you think it will tell the story of how Jesus became a pedophile?
I hope not, I guess.
I don't know, man. Eight-year-olds, dude.
Eight-year-olds, you're right.
All right, let's move on to the next bit of film news, which is also pretty interesting. There's been a couple of directorial attachments over the past couple of days, one might say. Sam Mendes is in talks to direct a remake of James and the Giant Peach, which is a
interesting.
Thing. Which is a thing. Ben Affleck is directing a remake of Witness for the Prosecution, which is also interesting. But the one that I really wanted to talk about is that Doug Liman, who is the director of The Bourne Identity and most recently Edge of Tomorrow, is going to be directing Justice League Dark. Now, you may be saying, Justice League Dark? That sounds redundant, considering the current state of the DC Universe.
You're correct. That is exactly what I was thinking.
But it sounds like this is going to be a separate thing from the Justice League, featuring the quote-unquote dark characters. And what I guess they mean by that is the characters that kind of deal with the paranormal and the weird and the obtuse. And this is a movie that's actually been in the works for a few years, because Guillermo del Toro was attached to this a while ago. I remember hearing about that, and then he dropped it a few years ago. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, in true Guillermo del Toro fashion, he's no longer attached to it.
Yes, exactly. Much like everything Guillermo del Toro ever does. He got attached to it, was doing it for a little while, and then stopped.
And then gave up.
Yep.
Or was removed, or whatever.
Or yeah, his problem is that he gets attached to 50 different things at once.
Right, exactly.
And so it's a miracle whenever a new Game of the Tour movie comes out.
Yeah.
But this was not going to be one of them, but this will be Doug Liman. And he was going to direct Gambit for Fox, the one starring Channing Tatum that would be the spinoff of the X-Men movies.
Right.
He has now dropped out of that. There's also no word on what this means yet for Edge of Tomorrow 2, which he's also attached to, or the YA adaptation with Daisy Ridley that he's also attached to. So Doug Liman's attached to a bunch of things right now.
Yeah, he's going to pull a Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, I think one of those things will have to go. Hopefully not Edge of Tomorrow 2, because I think that would be... if they're going to make that movie, I would like Doug Liman to be attached to it.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
So have they announced what characters it'll be, like the ones that deal with the paranormal? Do we know what those are?
Yes, they have, Mike. Way to listen to me before the show.
Unless there's a co-host.
Yes, they have announced a lineup of these characters for this Justice League Dark, and they will be John Constantine, Swamp Thing, Deadman, Zatanna, and Etrigan the Demon. Now, I know who three of these characters are. I know John Constantine, I know Swamp Thing, and I know Zatanna.
Okay.
And John Constantine is probably the highest profile one here because of his one season TV show got canceled starring Matt Ryan, which aired right. 2 years ago or 1 year ago. And also the movie starring Keanu Reeves called Constantine, which I don't think was a big success at the box office.
I don't think so. I think it's found a cult following.
Yeah. I know you're actually a pretty big fan of Constantine, right?
Yeah, I really like that movie.
Okay. I saw it once when I was half drunk. And I was watching it to prepare for the TV show, which I ended up not watching. So,
Perfect.
So there is that. However, the character, I did watch the pilot of the TV show, and I saw the episode of Arrow where they got the guy who played John Constantine in the TV show to cross over to Arrow.
Right.
So there was that.
That's
Swamp Thing has also had a movie. There was a Wes Craven movie called Swamp Thing in 1982.
Based on the comics?
Based on the comics, based on Swamp Thing. Wow. I think it was a TV movie, actually. But Wes Craven was
That's even better.
Yeah. and then there's Zatanna, who's like this magician woman, who I only know because she was in the video game Injustice, Gods Among Us. In any case, these are like pretty B-list characters. One might even say C or D-list.
Yeah.
You know. But that might give Lyman more freedom to work around and kind of just do his own thing with this movie.
Yeah, I think that'd be really – it's a really interesting idea. I just – I don't – like, why put Justice League in the title? Like, I don't
– Well, that's the thing. The movie's actually not titled Justice League Dark now.
Okay.
The movie's called Dark Universe.
That's even worse.
I know. We already know this is a dark universe. We've seen three of these DC movies already. It's not getting any lighter.
Yeah.
It's also kind of weird because this is the – third team-up movie that DC is going to be making. You know, because they did Suicide Squad, they're doing Justice League, and now they're doing this Justice League Dark Universe movie. And it's almost like they greenlit this, like, a week ago, and it's like, okay, we're going to do Suicide Squad again, but this time we'll try to get it right. Like,
yeah, but this time there's ghosts.
So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Doug Liman's a good director. Like, he's actually a very good action director. He directed Born Identity and Edge of Tomorrow, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. He also did Jumper, but, you know, everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah.
but you know what? Speaking of dark universes, and here's the opposite of that, Marvel just released their Civil War Team Thor shirt. not shirt, short.
I mean, there's probably also a shirt.
I'm sure you could buy a shirt as well. And it is fantastic. I loved it. It was so funny. Yeah, so this aired at Comic-Con a couple months ago. Marvel had their big panel. And, you know, they didn't have any footage to show from Thor Ragnarok. So director Taika Waititi, who directed What We Do in the Shadows, did this short film starring Thor, Chris Hemsworth as Thor, showing what he was doing during Civil War. And basically, according to the short, he moved in with an Australian roommate named Daryl.
Right.
And he was kind of just messing around, and he was looking for Infinity Stones, and he has like a little bulletin board
he's got the classic conspiracy theory strings going on.
Like, what are Infinity Stones? There's a picture, and there's like a drawn picture of Thanos.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do we know about this purple man in a chair? He likes to sit down.
He is purple. Yeah, it's a really this is what we always talk about. This is why we fucking love the Marvel movies, because they do stupid stuff like this that are silly. And
yeah, they know
what happens if Thor moves in with a roommate. Like,
they know how to have fun with these characters. And like, Taika Waititi is a great director. He did What We Do in the Shadows is one of my favorite movies of last year. It's phenomenal. It's really funny. He also directed a couple other movies. He directed Hunt for the Wilder People, which comes out this year and it's supposed to be very good. I recently watched his movie called Boy, which was very good. That was on Mubi, which is a really cool streaming service that I just subscribed to. It's very cool. Maybe I'll mention that in discussions. We'll get to that in a little bit. Yeah. tease. but in any case, yeah, the Civil War Team Thor short is fantastic. I keep saying
now you're going to have to design a shirt.
Though. I have to. It'll be a shirt that is the drawn picture of Mjolnir holding a tiny Thor with his muscly arms.
Perfect.
I just like the level of detail and like the level of jokes in this short are just so funny. It's so good. I was a really big fan. Also, Mark Ruffalo makes an appearance as Bruce Banner, which is also delightful. And he has a pretty funny conversation with Thor about how he wears sweatpants when he turns into the Hulk. But when he wakes up, he's cutoffs. He doesn't know how.
Yeah, there's a lot of just silly in jokes and stuff like that that I appreciated a lot.
Yeah. But I think the image of the short for me is Thor giving us a tour of his room and having Mjolnir in its like little crib, like tucked in the blanket.
Yep, wrapped up in a blanket on a pillow.
Yeah, just adorable. Just fantastic. And I'm really hoping Thor Ragnarok is just like an hour and a half version of this.
It's just a mockumentary.
Yeah, because that'll be amazing. Like,
you're right.
I would be completely on board. And I'm pretty sure Daryl in the short was in What We Do in the Shadows. I think he played Stu. Which, have you seen What We Do in the Shadows?
No. I've heard all about it, and I know I need to see it.
Stu is a human character in What We Do in the Shadows, who just the vampires hang out with.
Okay.
Because they turn one guy into a vampire, and then he's like kind of upset about it, but he brings his friend Stu along after he's turned into a vampire, who's still a human. And they decide they hate this new guy who they turned into a vampire, but they love Stu. And they, so they don't want to stop hanging out with this guy because Stu's so great.
I think I remember reading somewhere on I think on Reddit about that the guy who played Stu was just like a sound guy on the set, and they like needed someone to just be like a silly friend, and then it turns out he's like part of, he's like kind of a main character, but he didn't know it. Amazing.
So this is basically my ad for What We Do in the Shadows. Go see it.
I guess so, yeah.
It's really good, but I'm very excited for Thor Ragnarok. I think Taika Waititi is going to knock it out of the park. I think he's going to bring a really different sensibility to these Marvel movies that we haven't really seen before. So,
yeah,
pretty stoked about that. But I guess that about wraps it up for film news, Mike. Let's move on into our discussions. Watch this. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies we see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're going to talk about movies for our discussions. All right, let's get into our discussions on Film Bookcast starting right now. Mike, what do you have to discuss with us today?
I have something a little more relaxed, a little laid back for discussions this week. So this past weekend, I had a lot of fun hanging out with a bunch of friends. You know, needed a recovery day after a weekend of lots of alcohol. And also, I got really sick.
Unrelated to the alcohol.
Yeah, it wasn't hungover. It was like, I have a fever. Please kill me.
right. Now, so, the hangover didn't help.
Yeah, exactly. a little double whammy there. So to take it easy, I have heard really good things about this on Netflix. It's the new Voltron Legendary Defender. They Netflix original. They put out an animated reboot, I guess, of Voltron.
Right.
Now, I don't know. Do you know much about Voltron, Mike? Because
I know very little. I know it has robots, right? Am I close?
It's robots. You're in the right ballpark.
It's kind of like Transformers, right?
Yeah, kind of. yeah, that's about as much as I knew. You know, the pop culture osmosis is about it. It's some 80s cartoon about robots who come together and make a bigger robot.
Right. Yeah, that was a thing.
Now, I'm in for that, I guess.
Yeah.
So they remade it. It's made by the same animation studio that I should have looked up the name of, but I don't remember, who did Avatar and Legend of Korra.
Right. Yeah, I did hear that.
So it looks gorgeous. It's beautiful. Okay. There's a lot of really great voice acting. I can't remember anyone's name other than Rhys Darby from Flight of the Conchords, who was Murray.
Yeah. Okay.
And the guy on The Walking Dead that they fake kill every season, who plays Glenn.
Well, really, they only fake killed him once, but it was terrible. Yeah. Stephen Yeun is his name.
Yes, yeah, he's one of the voices.
Okay.
So there's some really solid voice acting talent behind it, and it's, you know, it's a Saturday morning cartoon, basically. And it's about giant space robots fighting smaller space robots. Like what could go wrong?
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I don't know if maybe the fever helped, probably. But I had a lot of fun with it. I watched 3 episodes. There's 11 total.
Okay. Are you going to keep up with it now that the fever's gone?
Yeah. I mean, why not? I think they're, you know, 25 minute episodes or something like that. So I might as well keep going because it's something to put on and just relax and not, it's just, you know. It's a silly anime Saturday morning cartoon, whatever.
Yeah, so that's the new Voltron on Netflix. Mike says it's pretty good. I've heard it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, the internet has blown up with it. Lots of just weird fan art and this silliness going on.
Yeah, I feel like you're coming at this. You've watched 3 episodes without knowing much about Voltron. You're coming at this like, yeah, it's pretty good. I'm hoping that like next time we record Film Bookcast, you come back to the discussions and you're like full on Voltron mode. You know everything about the lore of Voltron.
That's it.
You show up wearing like a Voltron costume.
Yep.
Audio podcast.
Just gonna go full on. Yeah, anime. What is it? Weeaboo. That's what I'm gonna be now. Don't worry about it.
All right, cool, cool. So that's Voltron on Netflix. Mike says it's pretty good. And here are a couple of my discussions. Since I mentioned it before, I'll mention Mubi, which is the streaming service that I just started subscribing to. It's amazing. Basically what it is, it's a movie streaming service, but it's specifically for movies that are older, movies that are classics, movies that are foreign movies, independent movies that people haven't you can't access that easily. And so in the time that I've had it, I've watched movies by Don Hertzfeld. I've watched movies by Kelly Reichardt. Park Chan-wook has a movie on there. And basically how it works is it's only 30 movies on there at a time. And every day they rotate out.
Wow.
So basically how, like, one movie disappears every day and a new movie appears every day.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so you basically have, once a movie shows up on Mubi, you have 30 days to watch it and then it disappears.
Right.
Which is a system that I really like because it gives me motivation to watch something before it disappears.
Yeah.
And it doesn't overwhelm me with choices like something like Netflix does, mm-hmm. where I kind of – like I've had a lot of times where I've just scrolled through Netflix for like an hour thinking that I'm going to watch something and then I ultimately don't.
Yeah. You'll spend an hour looking for something and then you watch a 22-minute episode of a TV show. Like,
unless I have a plan for what I'm watching on Netflix, like I try not to scroll on Netflix anymore because I just get lost in like choice.
Yeah.
But so Mubi is a very cool streaming service. I really dig it. I found out about it because Edgar Wright did. I guess they've been around for a little while. And Edgar Wright did this thing like his 1,000 favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it was like this big, massive list that was for Mubi. Like they did like a big like thing on their site with it. And so that kind of got the word out to me that movie is a thing that exists. And so that's actually where I watched Takeaway TT's Boy. And it's very, very good. So, a lot of cool stuff there right now. There's movies by Billy Wilder on there. There's movies by Werner Herzog, and a lot of really cool stuff. So that's Mubi. I wanted to bring that up briefly since I mentioned it before. But then my actual discussions for today, I saw Kubo and the Two Strings, recently. Which is the new film from Leica Animation Studios. It's the first one directed by Travis Knight, who is the head of Leica Animation Studios. And this movie is fantastic. I loved it. It is like a truly unique visual style that's heavily influenced by Asian culture. And it's one of the most like just thrilling and pure adventure movies to be released in like a long time. I got a very heavy like Legend of Zelda influence in this movie. Like a lot of the movie is Kubo questing to get a sword and then questing to get armor. It's like literally Legend of Zelda.
Yep.
And there has been a little bit of controversy surrounding the cast since all of the Asian main characters are voiced by white actors, which, or at least most of them are. Like there is like a couple of Asian people throughout the movie. Like George Takei has a role in this movie, which as a white person, I feel like it's probably not my place to comment on that. But you know, I'm not the one being offended here, but I will.
But you've acknowledged the problem, which is a step forward that most people don't take.
Yeah, so there you go. I will say that all the actors do a tremendous job. I think Charlize Theron and Matthew McConaughey as Kubo's companions are fantastic. They have a really good rapport back and forth. And there are sequences here that just like took my breath away. And it leans heavier on CGI than previous Leica films, which are all stop motion. And this one is stop motion as well. But like there always is a little bit of CGI in their movies too. It's kind of like a blend. So this one leans heavier on CGI, but the stop motion craft is like amazing. Like it's next level stuff. I just think they do amazing stuff. And this movie's been in the works for 5 years. Like that's how long stop motion takes. Like,
yeah.
And it's actually, I believe it has the record. It's the longest stop motion animated movie ever.
Really?
Beating out Coraline, which was also Leica.
Yep.
So there you go. I'm just so impressed with Leica on like every time they come out with a new movie. I really love what they do. Cause I feel like they're putting out really original and bold stories, pretty much every time. Like they made 4 movies now and I would say 3 of them are like fantastic, and one of them's really good, which the really good one's the Box Trolls. But that, you know, it's really good. It's not on the level of their other stuff, but it's really good. And it has one of my favorite jokes of all time in it, so there's that. But like Coraline and Paranorman are both amazing. Paranorman in particular, I think, is like one of the most fun movies released in the last several years.
Yeah.
And Kubo kind of leans toward that, although it's less horror tropey than Paranorman. Paranorman's a lot about like, it's kind of a love letter to horror B movies,
right?
Whereas this is more a love letter to like samurai action movies, martial arts films, that kind of stuff. I really loved it. I really dug it. Kubo and the Two Strings, aces. One of my favorite movies of the year. I really enjoyed it. And the other thing I want to talk about was Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. If you're unfamiliar with the Harry Potter franchise, it's a story about a boy wizard.
Chapter one.
The Boy Who Lived. I'm just going to read 7 Harry Potter books in this time. You'll wait, right?
In the discussion.
I will read them aloud to you. This will be an audiobook as well. No, I won't do that. But this is the... So basically, this is the 8th story in the Harry Potter series. Basically, this is the... on the cover, it says the special rehearsal edition script of the new Harry Potter play that's premiering in London. It is billed as the 8th and supposedly final story in the Harry Potter saga. Of course, the 7th one was also the final one.
The final one till the next one comes out.
It's like you know, Saw the final chapter. Right. They're making a new Saw. You know, Freddy's Dead, the final nightmare. That was the 4th one, and there are 6 more. Or whatever. But this play centers around Harry Potter's son, Albus Severus Potter, who becomes best friends with Draco Malfoy's son, Scorpius. And I will go into some plot details here, because I feel like it's of interest. And the book's been out for about a month now, so I feel like it's safe to, you know, throw out some... I won't go into spoilers, but I'll just say what the basic plot of the book is. Cedric Diggory's father, Amos Diggory, recruits Albus and Scorpius to go back in time using an illegal time-turner to prevent Cedric from dying in the Triwizard Tournament. And naturally, chaos ensues. If you've seen any time travel story before, you know this is a bad idea.
Yeah.
I will say that I very much enjoyed it, though it gets very fanfiction-y at times, I feel like. The play is written by Jack Thorne and John Tiffany, based on a story by J.K. Rowling. So J.K. Rowling helped develop this, but she didn't write it. Like, it's not her... It's not necessarily her baby, although she seems very supportive of the play on Twitter and stuff like that, and all that good stuff. It's fun to see where certain characters have ended up, though, again, very fanfiction-y at certain points. But, you know, it's still cool to see those. And I think Albus and Scorpius are really fun protagonists that carry the story very well, especially Scorpius, who is just a sarcastic motherfucker. he's really snarky, and I really liked him. And it's all about legacy and, like, you know, what it means to live up to these famous names, kind of like a Kylo Ren's arc in Star Wars Force Awakens. It jumps around in time and plays around with key scenes in franchise history in some very fun ways. It's kind of like somebody watched Terminator Genesis and said, hey, I think we can make a version of this that's good. And so...
Let's market it to the young adult market, and we'll make lots of dollars.
Exactly, and we'll make it a play. And based on how it reads, I do think it would be tremendous to see performed live. Like, I can imagine the visual effects, like the wizardry that has to take place on stage to get this thing to work. And I've heard very good things about the play. I feel like, you know, I'm reading it, and it's a script, so it's different than the books, and it's different from the movies. It's kind of its own thing, and I appreciate it. I liked it. I do want to talk about one specific scene. And you don't care that much about spoilers, right, Mike? This isn't really a spoiler, because this takes place over 2 pages in this thing. And it's never mentioned again, basically. But it's so bizarre and so weird, I feel like I have to talk about it. It's like...
All right.
So there's the part... this part where Albus and Scorpius are trying to escape from the Hogwarts Express. And... the trolley witch, who is the witch that pushes the trolley that has all the candies and stuff on it, you know, from the movies and stuff.
Yeah.
She stops them. And she's like, what are you guys doing? You have to stay on the train and stuff. But they kind of ignore her and they leave. They get on top of the train. The trolley witch follows them up on top of the train. And it turns out the trolley witch is some kind of demonic hell beast that throws, like, pumpkin bombs. She throws, like, grenades out of the candy that she has.
What?
It is bizarre.
She's the Green Goblin?
Like, I have no idea. It was so weird. And it happens over, like, the course of 2 pages. They escape her. And it's, like, never brought up again. I feel like this is, like, a game changer. Like, why is this not... Why aren't you talking about this all the time?
That really sounds like some Tumblr-y fan fiction bullshit.
So that was a... I would say a bit of a misstep. But again, I imagine if you're watching it on stage, it probably looks really cool, at least.
In theory, I don't like. I'm sure it is awesome.
But that, like, that was just like one misstep. Otherwise, there's a lot of really good stuff in here, and I feel like, you know, Harry's arc is pretty interesting. His relationship with Albus is pretty interesting, and all that good stuff. So enjoyed it with some reservations, but I did very much like it. And yeah, I might pick it up and read it again later. You know, who knows?
At some point.
I'm a Harry Potter fan.
And you got the current final chapter.
The current final chapter until the next one, which will be released in November as Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Oh, that's not continuing the Harry Potter story. That's just the Wizarding World.
That's a Harry Potter story.
All right.
I guess.
You're going for a Rogue One joke there, and I appreciate it. But
I tried.
I don't think it quite worked, but you gave it a solid attempt.
Yeah.
All right, Mark, are you ready to move on to our review?
I am.
All right, let's do that. Let's move on to our featured review of Don't Breathe.
Yo, I got our ticket out of here. Rumor is this guy is sitting on at least 300K. Boom!
That's our guy.
Wait, is he blind?
We messed up to rob a blind guy, isn't it?
Just because he's blind don't mean he's insane, bro.
Guys, money's probably in there.
Who's there?
Stay right there.
How many of you are there?
Just me, man, all right? Just let me go, please.
All right, that was from the trailer for Don't Breathe. That's the new film written by Fede Alvarez and Roto Sayagas and directed by Fede Alvarez. It stars Jane Levy, Dylan Minnette, Daniel Zavato, and Stephen Lang. The IMDb plot synopsis of this movie is a group of friends break into the house of a wealthy blind man thinking they'll get away with a perfect heist. They're very wrong. I love that plot synopsis.
That's hilarious.
They're very wrong.
Oh, IMDb.
You could put that at the end of almost any plot synopsis, and it would work.
And it still works, yeah.
You know, Danny Ocean thinks he can steal money from this casino with his team of 11 men. Actually, he's pretty right. Now that I'm thinking about it.
Wait a second. You picked the one example.
Sorry, let me try again. Shrek thinks he can save Fiona from a tower and she won't love him because he's an ogre. He's very wrong.
Shrek thinks there'll only be four movies.
There we go. He's very wrong.
But he's very wrong.
So Fede Alvarez was the director of Don't Breathe, and he was the director of the Evil Dead remake from 2013, which also starred Jane Levy in the lead role, and like this film, was produced by Sam Raimi and Robert Tapert. Now, I know we're somewhat divided on the Evil Dead remake, right? Because you're a big fan, right, Mike?
Yeah, I really like that one.
Okay, I myself think it's fine, and I think it definitely delivered on gore.
Yeah, it did.
I'm pretty sure I'm not 100% certain about this, but I think I've read somewhere that it actually has the record for most like blood packets on set or something, like something gory or whatever. So, but in my opinion, I didn't find it particularly scary. I just found it kind of gory, and it didn't really feel like it felt like Evil Dead to me, because the original Evil Dead, and I think this was trying to be more like the original than Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness, which are more campy and comedically based. The original Evil Dead I find terrifying. Like, even today, I watch and I'm like, this is an incredibly great horror movie.
Okay, cool. I'm glad I'm not the only one that actually thinks the first one is really scary.
Yeah, and it's campy, sure, but it's like,
yeah,
like the technique and stuff that goes into that is like really intense, and it's like, it's a really scary movie. And this one I didn't find particularly scary because I didn't really feel like it felt like Evil Dead. And I don't think any studio finance movie could.
Unless
Sam Raimi was directing it. Even then, it would probably feel more like Evil Dead 2 or Army of Darkness. Right. You know, what makes Evil Dead Evil Dead is, you know, that grungy kind of, like, I made this for no dollars.
Yeah, in the woods in my backyard.
Yeah, basically thing. So that's what Evil Dead is to me. And the Evil Dead remake has a lot of interesting elements. And if not for the need to, quote-unquote, be an Evil Dead movie...
Right.
I think that movie could have had an opportunity to be a really cool original thing, because it had the character work there. I think there's the plot of, it's been a few years since I've seen it, but the plot of that movie is that Jane Levy's character is like this recovering drug addict, and so she's brought into the woods by her friends, right?
Yeah, to do like an intervention kind of
Right. And so
detox thing.
The movie plays around with the fact that she's a drug addict, like a recovering drug addict, and so like the things that she's seeing in the woods might just be like a hallucination of her, you know,
yeah.
drug addiction and stuff like that. And the thing is, I feel like that never worked for me because it's an Evil Dead movie, so I know it's not a hallucination. You know?
Right.
And that's a pretty big part of that movie. And then, you know, there's callbacks to the original Evil Dead, like, oh, here's the tree rape scene because it's Evil Dead.
Because Evil Dead, yeah. No, that's definitely true.
But that said, like, there's a lot of really cool stuff in the movie, and I feel like if it was an original piece that was, like, if it didn't have the words Evil Dead in the title...
Right. It was just titled Spooky Cabin.
Spooky Cabin, the movie. Which was the cabin in the woods, I believe.
I was going to say, that whole plot is just ruined, like, can't be done anymore because of Cabin in the Woods.
Which was actually the thing, because I remember when Evil Dead, the remake, came out. It came out a year after Cabin in the Woods, and I was like, what's the point of this? Like, we already did this. We can't do this again. It's already been...
Yeah.
But in any case, now we have Fede Alvarez's follow-up film, Don't Breathe, which is an original movie. It's an original idea. And Alvarez has said that he had a lot of offers for various franchises following the release of Evil Dead, but he opted to scale back and develop something on his own, original. And Don't Breathe is where I can say I really felt Fede Alvarez kind of come into his own in this one.
Yeah.
You know, it trades in the gore of Evil Dead for very long, like, maintained, tense silences.
Yeah.
And I think it works a lot better for me in any case.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this. Did you feel that in the Evil Dead remake, now there obviously is a lot of, like you said, throwbacks and references and homages to the original Evil Dead, but did you feel Alvarez shone through as a filmmaker?
There are very good sequences in that movie. There's a lot of very well-directed scenes.
Right.
I just felt, you know, it wasn't Evil Dead to me.
Right. That's all. I wanted to make sure that it wasn't just like, he's just trying to do Sam Raimi stuff.
I mean, I think there is a little bit of that in that.
There
movie.
Is some of that, you know, the weird camera twisty turny
right.
pans and zoom stuff.
That's kind of why I appreciated Don't Breathe as much as I did. And I actually very much enjoyed this movie, so I'll throw that out there now.
Yeah.
It's why I kind of appreciated Don't Breathe more, because I feel like it gave me more of a sense of who Alvarez is as a filmmaker. Like, he's not imitating Sam Raimi. He's not calling back to another movie. He's doing something that's totally his, totally his own thing. And I felt like there's a lot of really cool directorial stuff going on here that I really appreciated.
Okay. I agree. I agree with a lot of that.
All right. Also, the movie goes some places that I was certainly not expecting at all.
Definitely not.
That I found pretty effective. So there's that. Mike, what did you think of Don't Breathe?
So I did really enjoy this movie, and this is the rare instance where, you know, I'm doing Jeff Cannata's Unsullied thing where, you know, you don't watch any trailer or try not to watch any trailers. Don't know, you know as little about a movie as you possibly can going into it.
Yeah.
And this movie, I think, is the only or the first or the most extreme case where I literally only knew the director. I only knew that this was a Fede Alvarez movie. And I knew nothing else.
So you knew nothing about the plot of this movie? You didn't know who was in it?
Yeah, I don't know if I've just been, like, watching less TV or this movie didn't have a whole lot of marketing or what.
No, I've seen trailers a lot. I've seen this trailer before. I've gone to the movie. I go to the movies pretty often, and I've seen this trailer a lot over the past couple months.
Okay.
And it's been playing on TV and stuff. I'm surprised that you haven't seen it.
Somehow I avoided it, and I never saw a trailer for it. Because that's normally what happens is I'll go to the movies and then I'll see the trailer. So, like, I will have at least seen the trailer once.
Right. But you don't go seeking it out, which is your thing.
Right. Yeah, I don't go on YouTube and watch the trailer. So somehow I didn't know anything about this plot or what this movie was. So I was really excited, and it adds a whole other layer of fun on top of going in, to see a movie. I've got no idea what's going on. So I thought it was... especially with a horror movie or a thriller, at least, that is like, it makes it somehow like you hype yourself up to be scared even easier, I think.
Sure.
I'm just going in expecting the absolute worst, like, scariest version of what my mind can, like, what horror movies do. They make you scare yourself kind of thing. So I had a lot of fun with this movie, although it's not scary in a traditional horror movie sense, I guess.
I would say it's more tense than scary.
Right. It's definitely much more of a thriller suspense. Well, the suspense kind of.
I would say so. I mean, I've said this before. I don't get scared that easily when it comes to movies, and I'm not saying that to be like, oh, I'm not a baby. But like,
I'm definitely not three toddlers in a trench coat.
See, you haven't watched BoJack Horseman yet, but man, you gotta jump on.
I know that's a BoJack Horseman thing.
But you know, I watch, the reason I don't get scared that easily is because I watch a lot of horror movies, and so I've kind of like seen it all. And so when I get like the stuff that really scares me, like I'd say the Babadook is probably the one that scared me the most.
Yeah.
Or the witch also freaked me out pretty hard. So that stuff, that kind of otherworldly, like, kind of getting in your head stuff is what really scares me. This is more like a home invasion thriller.
Yeah.
That's kind of like a reversal, because they invade the home, but then the person in the home is actually terrorizing them.
Right.
And so they have to escape the home. And so home invasion thrillers, I very much enjoy. I've seen many of these as well. And this is a genre that is easy to be kind of boring in. Like, there's a lot of home invasion thrillers that are pretty rote and pretty uninteresting.
I was going to say that the other most common thing besides go to a cabin in the woods is someone breaks into your house.
Yeah. Right, because it's easy, because that's something that scares people in life. Right?
Yeah, that's a real life thing that can happen to you. So. But that said, so I was really thrilled. I never know what to say for that when the movie's a thriller.
Right.
But I was really tense. I was really on edge for a lot of what was going on in this movie. I'm praise its hour and 20 minute or whatever it is runtime in the era of 2.5 hour movies that we get all the time.
Right. And I mean, horror movies in general are pretty shorter. But even like The Conjuring 2 was much longer than a usual horror film. I think it was like over 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've talked about it a bunch. I think I'm having like blockbuster fatigue, where like every third movie we see is a crazy blow up, a whole city action movie.
Yeah.
So when we see a tiny small scale story that takes place in one house, it feels really refreshing and engaging way more than, you know, Suicide Squad or whatever it could ever be.
Not to slam Suicide Squad, because we just did that for an hour and a half last week.
But I can't stop. Like.
You're right. And I think this past summer in particular, I feel like a lot of the big budget movies have not been very good.
Yeah.
Which has been a thing. I've seen a lot of articles written about this. And, you know, there's been, like, there was Civil War, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Finding Dory, which is also very good. But then, you know, you got movies like X-Men Apocalypse, which is pretty disappointing. Suicide Squad, which was terrible. And then there are movies that even I missed, like Independence Day Resurgence. Warcraft was a big one that's completely whiffed. Alice Through the Looking Glass. You know, I feel like I actually did a pretty good job of missing a lot of the ones that that I might have seen. I kind of wanted to see Warcraft, because I like Duncan Jones, and I kind of wanted to see Independence Day 2 just because it's Independence Day 2.
Right.
You know, and then there's like Jason Bourne, which was disappointing to a lot of fans. Like, that movie didn't get great reviews, and I know you didn't like it that much. So I feel like the bigger movies this summer haven't been that great. But the smaller ones have mostly been pretty, like, there's been a lot of really good ones. I mean, I saw Lights Out recently, which is very good. Kubo and the Two Strings, which was fantastic.
Right.
I think this has also been a very good year for horror movies, too.
And it's like the summer, which is crazy.
We haven't even reached October yet.
Yeah, it's not even horror movie season yet.
Yeah, I don't even know if there's any like big horror movies coming out in October. I know Blair Witch coming out in September.
Yeah.
Also, there's Rings at some point, the sequel to The Ring.
Oh, sure, why not?
Which will probably be lousy. Like, I'm not going to pretend that I'm excited about Rings, but
yeah.
You know, this year we've seen The Witch, we've seen The Conjuring 2, we've seen Lights Out, The Purge election year, all of which had pretty slow. Like, The Conjuring 2 had the biggest budget of all those movies, and that was like $40 million. Like, it was not a huge budget. So, you know, I think it's for horror fans, this has been a very good year, and Don't Breathe is just another addition to a very stellar track record.
Yeah, but let's get into the actual movie. What did you think of it? Like?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very solid thriller. You know, it's I found myself comparing it to Lights Out a lot, just because it's kind of similar on the surface. Just because they're both horror films. They're both thrillers. They're both made in a very low budget. They're both produced by pretty prominent horror directors. Sam Raimi produced this movie, and James Wan produced Lights Out. And I think I like this movie more than Lights Out. Lights Out I liked a lot. It was like a pretty solid time. But I think this one hits you with a very visceral reaction a lot of the time, which I found very appealing. I don't know how it'll play on a second watch, but I did really enjoy it in the moment. I think Jane Levy is a very good lead for this movie and for Evil. She's a very good lead in Evil Dead as well. Here she's playing a character who's doing a very bad thing.
That's the other thing, that the protagonists are not redeemable really at all.
Yeah, they're assholes, especially Money, who...
who's the worst.
Yeah, like, I'm, you know, like, as soon as he shows up, I was like, man, why is she dating this guy? Like, but she's still very likable in this movie, despite the fact that she's doing a very bad thing. And Dylan Minnette, the other... Alex, the guy who pines after her, is also pretty good. He was actually a... odd bit of trivia. I recognized Dylan Minnette from a pretty prominent guest star role in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then I was looking into it, and it turned out Daniel Zavato, who played Money, was also in that same episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
What?
Wasn't that crazy?
What's a twist?
Fancy that! But Dylan Minnette was also... he was in the Goosebumps remake, or the Goosebumps movie with Jack Black last year as well. But I think the trio works pretty well. I like them. I like them as a trio. Like, I don't like them because they're bad people, but...
They're good together, though. There's good chemistry there. I also thought setting it in Detroit was a really, probably because it's dirt cheap to film there, but also, like, it added a whole nother layer of just the, like, despondent situation that everyone is in throughout this whole movie.
Yeah, exactly. Also, Stephen Lang is excellent.
And
very creepy presence as the blind man. Stephen Lang, probably most well-known for being the villain in Avatar.
Right.
He's a great character actor. He's been in a bunch of stuff, but that's probably his biggest role to date. But this gives him more of a chance to shine than I feel like most things give. Like, I figured after Avatar I would see him in a lot more things. I figured I would see Sam Worthington in a lot more things, too, and look how that turned out. So there's that. Stephen Lang's very good in this movie. And, I mean, Alvarez's camera... just moves so very fluidly and efficiently in this movie. Yeah. When the trio first enter the house, there is this incredibly long, continuous shot. And I think it was like kind of made to look like one continuous shot. There are bits where it's like, okay, I can see where this they would cut and kind of just kept going. Yeah. But it works very well. And it kind of gives you the entire layout of the house right up front.
Wow, I didn't even think of that. You're right. That's exactly what it does.
Yeah, it kind of like it's designed to give you a layout of the house so you know exactly where everything is at any given time. And it highlights elements that are going to come into play later in the movie.
there's a couple moments that I felt at least one of them might have been an Evil Dead homage, or at least anytime I see a workbench, I think of the Evil Dead.
Okay, well, that was actually that was the thing that made me kind of catch on to it, because it's actually pretty funny. It's like the camera kind of zooms over like the tool shed area, right?
Yeah. While someone's in there, at least, you know, there's a reason that we're there.
Well, yeah, and that's what kind of makes it so effective, is you're following the characters while the camera's following them. But while it's in the tool shed area, it kind of hovers over like the hammer. That's just
and like lingers just, there.
It lingers there for a little bit. It's like, remember, this hammer's here. It's going to come back into play later.
Yeah. Yep.
So I did think that was very effective, and, you know, it kind of goes up the stairs and it goes through the blind man's room and you see certain things, and it's just really, really cool. It's a really great shot. I think it's my favorite bit of the movie because it just sets up everything that comes afterwards.
Yeah. It's so good at what it did. I didn't even realize it, that it gives you the whole layout of the house where you need to know everything. Yeah. And it's a beautiful shot too. It looks great.
Yeah. It looks awesome. So that's really cool. Is there, anything else you want to talk about before we move into spoilers, Mike?
Well, the general use of sound and what, like you mentioned, it drops you into just pure silence for some. Well, not pure silence, but removes all the background music and everything, and you're just all you hear is clothes shuffling and people breathing, and and makes you kind of realize how loud everything is when you don't even know it. And it, I don't know, it's really cool and effective at making. Making you hyper aware of stuff and creepy, and that, being super tense.
Yeah, exactly. And that's when you hear like a floorboard squeaking or something, and you realize like, oh shit.
yeah, exactly. And I liked that it was, because that tactic is all used in a lot of horror movies, basically to set up a jump scare where we're gonna hover on a thing, like, you know, linger on a shot, and now there's no music, and now you're waiting for something.
and something's going to jump out and we're going to scare you. But this is like a floorboard creaks and or somebody bumps into something, and it's really effective.
Yes. Yeah. And it's a total 180 from Evil Dead. You know, that's a movie that is about blood pouring out people's mouths and onto people's faces. Like,
it's blood out of the wall.
Yeah. So, you know, to go from that to like this kind of like bombastic gore fest to this very kind of restrained horror thriller, which is still like very intense, and there's still a lot of violence in it. It's, you know, it's I think very impressive, and I think I'm very excited for whatever Fede Alvarez does next.
Yeah, he's definitely a director I will be paying attention to keep track of.
Yes. All right, so should we move into spoilers, Mike?
Yes, we shall.
All right, let's move into spoilers for Don't Breathe, starting right now. All right, so spoilers for Don't Breathe, starting right now. Let's talk about the blind man's rape room, Mike. That's...
Sure.
Whoa!
Yeah.
So I mentioned before this movie took some directions that I did not expect at all. No. And so I'm going to just run through the sequence of events that happens throughout this movie. It's kind of insane.
Yep.
So it turns out that the blind man kidnaps the girl who ran over his daughter and kept her in a harness in his basement, and also impregnated her by inserting his sperm with a turkey baster. Then this girl is killed by the blind man as Rocky and Alex try to help her escape. And then the blind man catches Rocky and puts her in the harness and tries to impregnate her the same way as replacement. And then Alex shows up at the last minute to smash him with a hammer. And then they shove the turkey baster full of cum into his mouth. And it's gross.
And
did I miss anything there, Mike?
It's gross. No, you got most of it.
I got the general gist. I mean, that whole sequence, I was like, whoa. Like,
yeah.
This is not what I signed up for. It was, you know, I feel like it's interesting, and I feel like it's almost necessary to have the blind man be doing something reprehensibly evil in order to make you feel something for these characters.
Like, yeah, because up until this point, they're literally thieves who broke into his house, and he's defending him
within
his house.
His rights to attack them.
Yeah.
And I almost think it might have been more interesting if this stuff wasn't in there and he was actually just defending them. But in any case, this stuff I think did mostly work. It's just really fucked up.
I mean, there's the the reveal that there's someone chained up in the basement when they are trying to escape, and I was like, what? Yeah. Like, it's totally changes the whole dynamic of the movie, and it's awesome.
Yes.
And then there's the second part with the turkey baster and all of that, which is just like ups everything to 11, and it's weird. And the scene takes so long.
Yeah.
It's another really amazing, creepy, tense thing that Alvarez did manage to do. Like, with weird, there's a lot of surgical type close-ups of a lot of stuff, and it's disgusting.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of it. It happens a couple times earlier throughout the rest of the movie with weird, gross close-ups and stuff like that. But it's just not a turkey baster full of semen. So it kind of pales in comparison to what it is that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very odd sequence. I think it's definitely the one that got the biggest reaction out of my audience that I saw this movie with. Because, I mean, just the bit where they shoved the thing back into his mouth. Like, you can feel the people in my audience just going like, whoa.
Yeah, everyone did that.
Yeah. But so that was a pretty intense, pretty wild turn of events that I did not see coming. I said, yeah, so we both wanted to talk about the scene in which he cuts the power and they're just basically in complete blackness. And so they're as blind as he is. Twist. Right.
What? Yeah, I thought that was that's probably my favorite scene in the whole film.
Yeah, that was very good.
Whole sequence. Yeah, he shuts the power, and for a little bit, it goes to just darkness, and we're not going to see anything. It switches to night vision, but it's not. It reminded me a lot of the end of Silence of the Lambs.
Okay,
it's kind of the similar thing going on. But I thought it was really interesting to to put them in his element. So we get a really cool tracking shot of him running through his memorized maze, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. And all that stuff.
Yeah, because now all three of them are blind, but he actually knows the terrain, which is you know, a huge disadvantage for them. But yeah, so that scene was great, very intense. I mean, you mentioned that it was night vision. I guess you can call it night vision. I feel like it was more like it goes dark for a few seconds, and then kind of gradually, like, kind of comes back. Like, and you see kind of outlines of everything that's going on. It felt more like to me, it felt more like your eyes are kind of adjusting to the darkness.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the feeling we're supposed to get with the camera. Like, as you said, it goes dark and then slowly fades back in.
Yeah.
And I think it might have been infrared, I think. I don't know what type of lens. I've seen that type of stuff because it's like black and white. It's not green night vision as you think of traditionally. It looks like they must have actually filmed. I mean, I guess they actually filmed it in pitch blackness just because of the way you could see Jane Levy and the other guy, Alex, the way you could see their eyes are they're trying to see. It looks like, I don't know. It makes it really effective of being in this grainy black and white kind of, you know, you can only see a couple feet. There's a moment where Stephen Lang stops standing and the camera pulls down a hallway or an aisle basically. And he just fades off into the camera can't see that far in the darkness. And it's a really effective use of that. I don't know. I really liked it. That scene was my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah. That was really good. Alex and Money are both killed, throughout this movie. Money's death is actually in the trailer. So,
okay.
Good on you for not watching it.
I had no idea. I mean, I kind of assumed, especially when he says I'm the only one, I was like, oh yeah, you're dead. but I thought it was awesome that not knowing that.
Right. but I thought the fake out of Alex's death after he gets into the fight with the blind man, and the blind man has the garden shears or something, and he puts him down and he stabs something and you think it's Alex.
Right.
And then later on it turns out he actually stabbed the corpse of Money, not realizing that Alex got out of the way. That was a very effective reveal. I thought that was very good.
Yeah.
For Rocky, I'm not sure if I buy Rocky's total insistence on getting the money, like, even in the face of imminent death and having seen the deaths of your two friends.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree that there's some, for the most part, the movie seems to be pretty realistic in terms of what, like, situation that's going on and, like, things that are happening to them.
Yeah.
I mean, barring, like, you know, the suspension of disbelief stuff, they're not, like, having a crazy hand-to-hand combat, you know, nothing weird like that is going on. But it definitely falls into, like, weird horror movie trope things like that where she has to get the money. And, like, it took me until after I got out of the movie and I was like, oh, the blind man is Michael Myers or Jason or he's a slasher type, like a villain.
Basically, yes. Also, I mean, what did you think of the dog in this movie, who has a very prominent role?
Yeah.
The blind man's evil dog who will follow people into vents and start chopping and chopping. I thought I liked the dog at first. I feel like they overdid the dog at the end.
Yeah, I feel like that might have been like a Cujo homage thing where she's trapped in the car with the dog outside.
Maybe, but I feel like at a certain point outside, like, that scene went on forever.
It did, yeah.
It felt like a little much. But otherwise, I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was very good. I think Fede Alvarez really directs the hell out of it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he does next. Do you have any other spoilery things to add, Mike?
Do I have anything? Not particularly. I think it ends in a weird, that's when I had the real, you know, I thought about that. It's the final scene of them in the train station, and she sees the news story that the blind man survived.
Yeah. So the blind man is still alive at the end. Do you think there could be a sequel? Perhaps a Don't Breathe?
Still Don't Breathe.
Don't Breathe 2, Still Not Breathing. Can't Stop, Won't Stop Breathing.
maybe. I doubt it, but it ends with him basically being a slasher horror villain where he just everything, the fake out deaths, he survives the whole thing somehow, and it's kind of implied that he's gonna follow her in some weird way, but I mean, I don't know. I still had a lot of fun with this movie, and I suggest not watching trailers for stuff because it's a lot of fun and it's a really cool experience to know nothing about a movie when you go into it.
Right. It's a good thing you said this after we've talked about the movie for a half hour.
Talked about it before already. I want to advocate for the Unsullied again. Yeah, that's all.
This movie did pretty well at the box office, from what I understand. I think it knocked off Suicide Squad as the number one spot. which for this movie, I think it had the budget of like $20 million. That's very good
nice.
For this kind of movie. And like that's what we've kind of been seeing this summer, is that movies that have very like smaller budgets have been turning a profit. And gee, I wonder why. Maybe because you're spending less money on them.
Who knew?
Who knew? Maybe every movie doesn't have to be $150 million to make. But I guess that about wraps it up for our Don't Breathe review. I liked it. Mike liked it. Go see it if you're a horror fan. Why not?
Yeah.
All right, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
Find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
Yes, and I'm Mike Smith. You can find me at filmbook.com, all my stuff at the film book and all that good stuff. Thank you for listening to Filmbookcast.
Professional.
Thank you for listening to Filmbook. Oh, my Twitter account, msmithfilmblog also. Thank you for listening to Filmbookcast. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike's Creed Show. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. If you want to contribute to Filmbook's Patreon campaign, you can go do so at patreon.com/filmbook. Any feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us 2 weeks for our next episode. The summer movie season is pretty much over now. And so we're kind of in the weird crossroads of, like, award movies are coming out. Right. And then there's, like, the smaller, like, kind of blockbustery stuff that might be a thing. So here's the thing, Mike. In 2 weeks, there's not much coming out except for Sully, which, like, I might see, because I like Tom Hanks, I like Clint Eastwood. But the week after that is Blair Witch.
Right.
Which I would definitely like to see. I think we could do a review for that. Or yeah, we could review Sully. So I'm giving you the option. Do you want to review Sully or Blair Witch?
Well, I mean, I don't really want to see Sully. I mean, I guess I do, but at the same time, I don't. I don't know. I guess we'll do Blair Witch.
Like, we, yeah, we already know he didn't hit the birds. So, like, what else is there?
Yeah, we already know how it ends.
All right. So, yeah. Blair, so we might, maybe we'll do, like, two complete works and then a film book cast or something, however it shakes out, because Blair Witch is the week after Sully.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. We'll keep you guys posted on what's going on. And you can check out our next complete works next week, where we'll be talking Kiss of Death, which is a very loose remake of a 1947 noir film of the same name, which stars Nicolas Cage and David Caruso and Samuel L. Jackson. It should be a good time. I'm looking forward to that. I've heard good things.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that one will be fun.
Yeah, hopefully. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We are out.